it took some work to learn the new techniques that advance. I've seen apheresis go from a open system that you had to manually prime to these sophisticated devices now that tell you and do everything automatically. If you don't keep up with the industry, you're going to have to learn it. And that's part of getting back into bedside nursing if that's where you want to go.
What does it take for an ICU nurse to rise to become an industry leader in apheresis and blood collection? Let's talk all about it with nurse and apheresis expert Lori Harada right here on episode 417 of The Nurse Keith Show. Hey there, this is Nurse Keith. This podcast is about you and your personal professional development, your career, and the healthcare system in the big picture. And I'm here to share education, ideas, diatribes, and informative interviews with some of the most inspiring people from the worlds of healthcare, nursing, entrepreneurship, medicine, and beyond. I love having you along for the ride, and I thank you from the bottom of my nurse podcaster's heart for being part of the growing Nurse Keith Nation. And if you'd like to help other people find the show, consider leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or Amazon or Spotify, or just share it with anyone else you happen to know who might enjoy the show from any app where you happen to be listening. And if you'd like to become a patron at patreon.com/nursekeith, you can help support the show for as little as $2 a month. That would really do me a solid. And that is patreon.com/nursekeith. The show notes are at nursekeith.com in the podcast drop-down menu. But of course, you can check out the show notes in any app where you happen to be listening. And like I said, we're here to talk with Lori Harada. She is a nurse and an apheresis expert, and she has a story to tell about her career and about apheresis, which we've never discussed on this podcast. And I think it's a really fascinating part of the healthcare system that deserves some attention. So Lori, I'm really happy to have you here. And first question I want to ask, just to clarify for everybody, what is apheresis and how does it figure in the larger healthcare system?
Well, thank you for having me, Keith. I appreciate your interest in apheresis. And to keep it simple, apheresis is to separate blood. And how we use apheresis in the healthcare setting is we treat multiple different diseases with different types of therapeutic apheresis or different types of blood separation. I'll give you some examples. Sickle cell disease is a disease of the red blood cells. And we can perform a automated red blood cell exchange on these patients and remove their sickled red cells and replace them with fresh donor cells. So apheresis uses a centrifugal device, a centrifuge, basically. It's kind of like a glorified cream separator where we separate the blood by specific gravity. Red blood cells are the heaviest, plasma is the lightest, and then in the middle, we call the buffy coat, which is the platelets and the white blood cells. So when we separate, depending on how we spin the blood, we can separate it into its different layers and take off different components to treat different diseases. There's also therapeutic plasma exchange, which is just the opposite of red cell exchange. We're taking the plasma off. And we treat diseases that affect neuromuscular, autoimmune, hematologic disorders, things like that, to remove the disease mediator that's in the plasma that's causing the symptoms of the disease. So that's kind of the therapeutic side. We also have a collection side, which entails collecting for stem cell transplant. So we can collect their stem cells. And in today's world, with immunotherapy, they're taking those white blood cells and turning them into cancer-fighting agents to kill the cancer. Then we have on the donor side of apheresis, when you go to a blood center, like I live in Colorado, so we have Vitalant here, but there are many different blood centers all over the country The American Red Cross is another one. They use apheresis devices to collect platelets for transfusion to cancer patients or patients who need extra blood components. We can separate the blood in our apheresis device and collect platelets, collect plasma, or collect red blood cells for transfusion.
Wow, that's quite a description. So we have the donor side when you go to a center and you're like, I want to donate some stem cells, right? Or I want to donate plasma. And then we have the therapeutic side and the collection side, right? And nurses and clinicians can get involved in any of those processes, right? Any aspects of the apheresis industry. Is that true?
That is true. Mm-hmm. Typically, the stem cells are collected more in a hospital setting or a clinic setting. You can't go into a blood center and say, hey, I want to donate my stem cells. That is a very matched process to be able to do that. The donor side is more for the blood components, red blood cells, plasma, platelets. There are centers that are getting into doing what we call allogeneic, which means to donate stem cell collections, but that's new and up and coming.
Mm-hmm. That would mean people go to donate stem cells when there isn't a specific person for whom they're donating, and there's sort of a bank of stem cells that can then be used to match?
Yes, that is true. There's a lot of research going on with white blood cells, and that research needs a source of material to do their research on. And that's where you can go in and donate your white blood cells to research.
I see. Okay. So you started out in the ICU, right?
Yes.
And you've been a nurse for 40 years. So
I started when I was 12, Keith.
You went to nursing school. You skipped like 7 grades and then went into nursing school. Yeah.
Exactly.
So 40 years. And you've been in the apheresis blood collection sphere for about 35 years. And what precipitated you making the leap from ICU into this particular industry? Did something specific come across your radar and you were like, whoa, or was it more kind of serendipity? How did it happen?
Well, it's an interesting story. When I was in nursing school, I was able to get a student nurse position in the ICU. And then when I graduated nursing school, I had a job in the ICU. And back in the early 80s, if there was not a nursing shortage like there is today, and if you did not have a student nurse position, you did not have a job coming out of nursing school. I was lucky enough to have that and started in a basic ICU in my little hometown of Joplin, Missouri. Then I moved to St. Louis, Missouri, and took a position in the open heart intensive care unit, which was really exciting, and loved that environment and actually loved being the preceptor for that unit. And that's how I kind of got into teaching, was I started out being a nursing preceptor. Well, in the late 80s, my brother developed a cardiogenic sarcoma, which is a tumor in his heart. And he came to my unit and we operated on him and found the tumor. And he lived a few months after that. But I got to know his oncologist. And after everything settled down after his passing, the oncologist came to me and said, how would you like to start my apheresis unit? Me knowing nothing about apheresis, nothing about blood collection. All I knew is how to transfuse units of blood and platelets and plasma. Not knowing anything, I started from scratch. And I started the apheresis department at St. Louis U back in the late 80s. And it was a growing experience for me. I learned so much. I think it was time for me to get out of the ICU. You know, ICU can be thrilling and exciting, but it also can be very, it can cause burnout. Mm-hmm. And I might have been in that situation looking for something new to get into. And it appeared to me through the situation of meeting the oncologist through my brother and he getting to know me and wanting to bring me into that fold. Then after I got the unit up and running, one of the medical device companies, back then it was Baxter that had the medical device, they approached me to come and be one of their clinical trainers. And I always loved training people on the devices, the how to do things. It was just kind of my nature. And that's when I got into industry and stayed in industry. I worked for Baxter for about 11 years. And then I had my own consulting business for 10 years where I consulted in new product development and developing training materials for new products. Then when we moved to Colorado, I took a position with another medical device company called Terumo Blood and Cell Technologies. And that's where I am currently today as their manager of what we call the technical excellence team. And that team is a group of 12 individuals across the United States that support our customers both in the blood centers and in the hospitals.
Wow, that's a great story. And first, I'm very sorry you lost your brother at such an early age. For both of you, that's a big loss. And I often do hear stories of people who, sometimes based on the loss of a loved one or the loss of a beloved patient or mm-hmm. some sort of crystallizing moment happens, and then opportunities arise out of that for various reasons. Either the person's mind has opened to something new, yep. or something new crosses their radar and their curiosity's peaked, and all of a sudden mm-hmm. there's a new direction that opens up. So people often come to me as a career coach and they say, you know, I just don't know what to do outside of acute care. You know, I don't know what the options are out there. And I hear that from a lot of nurses. And of course, we can't hear about all the options when we're in nursing school. I think we should learn about more of the options when we're in school, but that's another conversation. So from your perspective, in terms of industry, you know, we have device development, we have product development, we have, you know, therapeutic, we have research, we have all sorts of peregrinations of how healthcare manifests out in the world and where jobs are created. Mm-hmm. So if you're a nurse, like you were an ICU nurse, and something new comes along, or even you're open to something new, what is it that opens your mind to see that, oh, I could move beyond this clinical space and actually find something satisfying? What does it take in the person to be open to that kind of change? Because a lot of nurses are afraid to move out of what seems to be mainstream nursing. And I'm putting big air quotes around the word mainstream.
That's an interesting question, Keith. And thinking about that, I think curiosity is a key to broadening your options, being curious about what else is out there. Nursing careers are multifaceted. You don't have to be a bedside nurse. You can be so many things. I mean, look at me. I've gone through many different job-related titles. I've been in sales and in marketing and clinical education and bedside nursing, ICU nursing. But you have to have a curiosity to look at what your options are and not be afraid of being stuck. Where mm-hmm. And a lot of nurses are afraid that this is what they know, and can I really do something else? Well, I'm a person that says, yes, you can. I've done it. And it's exciting to learn something new, even at an older age. Having that curiosity to learn and develop, I've been in this world, as you know, in nursing for 40 years and in apheresis for 35. Every time I go out and I train customers, train nurses, I learn something new from them that enhances my knowledge and curiosity about the world.
I think curiosity is the key there. I use that term a lot, so I'm glad you brought it up. But you were 5 years in, and like we said, you started as a nurse at 12. So, you know, you were young.
Yeah.
And,
child prodigy.
That's right. And when that oncologist came to you and said, hey, do you want to start our apheresis department or unit? You didn't know anything. You said you knew nothing. You knew how to hang platelets and hang blood products, right, for cancer patients. But you didn't know what this industry truly was. And I think most of us in nursing probably don't think about it. When we need a bag of plasma, we order it, we get it. And we don't really think about what happened to get this bag of plasma in my hand.
That's exactly right.
So nurses will say, you know, I'm afraid of losing my skills. I'm afraid if I end up wanting to leave this particular industry after a few years, no one will hire me. You know, what do you say to people who have that level of fear around leaving the comfort zone and then feeling like, oh my gosh, I'll never be able to go back?
Well, it depends on how long you're out, because you do lose some skills, but innately, nurses are caring, nurturing people. That's why we went into nursing. And those basic skills of nursing, I don't think you ever lose. I haven't been in bedside nursing for a long time. And I still have my neighbors come to me because I'm a nurse. And Lori, what do you think about this or this ache or pain? And you still get that exposure, even though you're not taking care of patients in the hospital. Now, will you have to refresh? Absolutely. If you're out for 10 years and you're not bedside nursing, you're going to need to refresh. You know, we all maintain our nursing license, but that doesn't mean we can actually use the new IV pumps that are out these days. I just to even look at them, I'm amazed at what they can do compared to what we used back in the 80s. So the fear of not being able to go back to nursing, you can always go back to nursing. I've had friends that are nurses that left the bedside nursing, went into industry, worked 10 years in industry, and then decided they wanted to go back to nursing. And they did. And they made that transition. And it took some work to learn the new techniques that advance. I've seen apheresis go from a open system that you had to manually prime to these sophisticated devices now that tell you and do everything automatically. So if you don't keep up with the industry, you're going to have to learn it. And that's part of getting back into bedside nursing if that's where you want to go.
Right. Right. And I'm glad you mentioned knowing people who've gone back into the clinical side. And you can do a refresher course if you really need to. And then if you're in the job market, you have to convince someone to quote unquote take a chance on you. And I've had clients who actually didn't work in nursing at all for up to 18 years to raise their children and then were able to come back into the profession. So they weren't even working at all. They were home.
Taking
care of kids and raising a family. So it can be done. And I'm glad that you've seen it done. And before we take a break, I just want to ask you, what do you find most fascinating about what you do? What really kind of captures your heart and keeps your mind sharp and interested and curious in terms of the apheresis industry?
My passion is training. And seeing someone get it, that light in their eye that, oh, that's how that works. Now I understand that. And if I have a part in them crossing over that knowledge bridge to to understanding and performing a procedure better and taking care of patients better, I get satisfaction out of knowing I contributed to their knowledge.
Great. And then you know that contributing to someone's knowledge and professional development eventually trickles down and affects patients, because the more people you have with expertise, et cetera, right? The industry grows, technology advances, you know, you're helping to populate an industry with great people doing great things and knowing what they're doing. So when we come back, I want to talk about being a leader, because I know you have 12 direct reports and you've been a leader for a long time. I want to talk about that. And I'd like to talk about Terumo Blood and Cell Technologies, the company you work for, and just hear a little bit about them and just a little bit more about your philosophy and outlook on your place in the world and other aspects of how you look at what you do and your place in the profession and the wider industry. So when we come back, we'll be here with Lori Harada of Terumo Blood Cell Technologies here on episode 417 of the Nurse Keith Show. And welcome back to the second half of the episode. We're here again with friend of the pod and my new friend and colleague, Lori Harada of Terumo Blood Cell Technologies. And Lori, prior to the break, we were talking about being a leader and really seeing the spark in other people and being able to contribute to someone's professional development and someone's sense of curiosity and fascination and growing expertise. And what is it like for you to be a leader? And you have 12 direct reports who you work with, and I believe they're RNs, med techs, technologists, so it's a variety of people. And what do you feel about being in a leadership position? What is it like for you? And what do you enjoy about it?
Well, let me think about that. It can be scary at times. It can be thrilling at times to see the accomplishment of the people who report to you. My feeling of being a leader is to support the people that report to me. Yes, I lead them, but I want them to lead themselves. They are responsible for taking care of their territories and their customers, and I'm here to support them and encourage them to grow and to learn more. When I first took over, when this group was developed, the technical excellence team, we combined the blood center side and the hospital side all into one big group. And previous to that, we were in our own little silos working, and one really didn't know what the other one did. And what was fun about taking over this team was the sharing of knowledge that both sides gave to each other. Now, the hospital side does things a certain way and the blood center does things a certain way, but you can learn from each other. And watching that interaction of the team and sharing, oh, I didn't realize that this device worked the same way as this device. And I've learned so much about it, and it's stimulating and it keeps people's attention in their job. You don't want people to get burnt out in their job. You want them to be stimulated and excited about doing what they do. And granted, there are times when you're bored with your job and you start looking. But if I can help pique that interest or provide an avenue for my direct reports to advance and grow into other areas of the country, then I'm doing my job. They're advancing their career, whether they leave this team and leave me, you know, I'm kind of like mother hen to them, and move on to sales or marketing or something else. then I'm very happy for them because they're advancing their career. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if I answered your question, but what I get out of this is watching my people grow.
That's great. And I think that's the sign of a really true leader who especially leads from behind. You know, you watch, you support, you cajole and coach from behind and watch them grow and develop. So in terms of the nurses who report to you, I know there's technologists and med techs too. What do the nurses actually do? Because I'm curious, you know, we understand what your job is. So what does a nurse who works in your industry do? Because someone listening might be like, oh, that sounds kind of cool.
So the nurses primarily work in the therapeutic side of our business, which is the hospital side. We have a device called the Spectra Optia blood cell separator. And that's the device that performs the therapeutic procedures on patients, whether it's a red cell exchange, a plasma exchange, a white cell depletion, bone marrow processing, stem cell collection, everything that's related to the hospital. That's where the core of my nurses work. And what they do when we onboard them, they learn how to teach the Optia, number one, and then they go and they teach other nurses how to use the device, and then they support those nurses in their first collections. So if they're, or their first procedures, if they are learning plasma exchange, we go in for a couple of days and teach them all about how to load and prime and run a mock procedure. We use actually bovine blood to be able to see separation. And we mock it all up and they get to practice and they practice in a safe environment. So if they make a mistake, we're just using bovine blood. It's not a patient. You know, you can make mistakes because, you know, that's how you learn, is to make mistakes. Once they get the basics down, then we hope to have the next day scheduled a patient to perform a procedure. And they perform the procedure. We're there in the background watching and making sure that nothing happens that's detrimental. But then they actually run the procedure. And it's important that they use their skills as soon as possible after training. I don't know if you know this, but when someone is taught something initially, guess how much do they really retain from that first learning experience? What percentage?
50 to 55%.
Try again.
30%.
Try again.
25%.
16%.
Wow, that's the retention 16. Rate for learning
that's
a new
skill.
That's
the retention rate of learning a skill.
Wow.
And we know this, and we know that it's, we want to focus on that 16% in their initial training. The most important things: loading the device correctly, troubleshooting the device, and reading the screen, because the screen will tell you everything that you need to do. And then from that 16%, you build and they learn. And we have advanced classes that help build on their knowledge. But the initial learning is really focused on being a safe operator and making sure the patient's safe.
And these nurses who report to you, when they go out to these hospitals, they're not the salespeople, right? Mm-hmm. They don't have to sell the hospital this device. That's somebody else. Someone else does that.
That's our salespeople.
There are nurses out in the world who actually are salespeople in the device world. But for you, these are not salespeople. So they don't have to go in and convince the hospital that they're going to use this. By the time they walk in there, the hospital's already bought it. They're already into it. They're bought into the whole system. And they're going in to actually train the nurses. And so the nurses welcome these trainers and educators, I'm sure, because they want to know how to do this right, because they want to do right by their patients. Yes. So for someone who thinks like, oh my gosh, I don't want to work for industry because I don't want to be a salesperson, there are jobs out in industry where you never touch the sales side, right? Yeah.
Well, indirectly.
Indirectly,
when you teach someone how to use a device and they fall in love with that device, you're selling that device. You really are. But you're not classically, and I'm doing air quotes too, classically selling. We're not in doing cold calls or anything along that line. We're actually welcomed into the hospital or the blood center because we're providing information and knowledge and a service that is appreciated.
Yeah, and that's a comfort zone for nurses because we don't want to necessarily be the ones who convince someone to invest in something. Though I know nurses who are in pharma or biotech or device industry, and they love going out and convincing a hospital or a healthcare system to buy some new product. And I think that's awesome. But for a lot of us, nurses are natural educators.
Yes.
And so it sounds like, you know, your philosophy is leading from behind, helping people learn best practices, maximizing their learning potential, and then helping them develop. And I'm sure some people leave and move on to other things, which is great. And as a leader, you want to see people make choices and new decisions.
And advance in their careers.
Advance, right. Yeah. And we all know, you know, on the average, I don't know what it is now, but I think most people stay at a job. I think it's probably 2 years tops for most people. So, you know, as leaders, we have to accept that too. But on the other side, I understand that you're actually named on a patent for the development of a particular product or system. And how did that happen? And what does that mean to be named on a patent?
Well, it just means your name's on the patent, and I helped develop. So part of the 10 years that I had my own consulting business, I was consulting in new product development and training development for new products. And at that time, I was consulting for a company called Cirrus, which is a company that has developed pathogen inactivation technology to remove pathogens or viruses and bacteria from blood products by exposing them to UV light and a Sorolin compound, which inactivates the DNA and RNA. So I was named on the patent because I helped develop the data management system for the Intercept program. And I helped with the developers. I was really their sounding board for how a nurse or how a operator would use this data management system. And I participated in testing of, you know, software testing for the software, using it in the clinic or it's actually used in the blood center back in the lab to inactivate the pathogens. So I was part of the groundwork of developing that software. And that's how I got into that.
That's great. So, I mean, it looks nice on a CV, you know, that you were named on a patent for development of a new device or system. And I'm sure sometimes if you're named on a patent, if that patent gets bought or used or whatever happens with that sort of thing, that there's residual income that can come from that. So that's just an interesting little addition to your history.
A lot of the patents are owned by the corporations that support them, and Cirrus owns that patent. I just have my name on it. That's all. Yeah. With a bunch of other people. Yeah, I'm not the only one.
Well, it's nice. I mean, it's a nice thing to have. You know, it's kind of like being able to say, you know, I was involved in something that, you know, really move the profession or the industry forward. You know, it's kind of a cool thing. So I wanted to ask you about Terumo. Mm-hmm. So where are they located and how long have they been around?
So Terumo Medical is located in Tokyo, Japan. Hmm. We're owned by a Japanese company, Terumo Medical. My division is called Terumo Blood and Cell Technologies. And we have been around for more than 40 years. Originally, this company was called Kobe Laboratories. and it's based in Lakewood, Colorado, which is a suburb of Denver. And over the years, just like any small company, you get bought and purchased by other companies. So in the 80s, it was Cobe Laboratories or Cobe Blood and Cell Technology, Cobe BCT. And then it was purchased by another company called Caridian. And then about 12 years ago, Terumo Medical purchased us. And we became Terumo Blood and Cell Technologies. The interesting thing is that was during my consulting career. And for the last 5 years, I was consulting with Terumo on a blood cell separator that they decided not to move forward with, and they bought Caridian instead. And the day that I started at Caridian was the day that it was announced that Terumo bought it. And it was such a big circle for me because I've been working on this product. And in this industry, it's a very small industry that you pretty much know everybody in the industry. And to have Terumo buy, have Terumo buy Caridian was a good step for them because they wanted to get into this blood cell separation industry and they couldn't do it in their own development. So they bought Caridian.
And nurses are used to these sorts of corporate mergers and acquisitions because many nurses have worked for smaller hospitals or hospital systems that are purchased by larger ones. So this sort of consolidation and shuffling happens all the time, you know, throughout the industry and beyond. And I'm just curious, have you ever been able to travel to Tokyo to the home office, so to speak?
Yes, I was there a few years ago before COVID, and I'm part of what we call the Global Trainers Network. So I am the lead in North America for the Trainers Network, but we have leads all in other regions. And we had a Global Trainers Network in our home office in Tokyo. And it was really fascinating to be there and to see it. And I don't know if you recognize my last name is Japanese. I'm married to a Japanese man. Harada is like Smith in Japan. And when the corporate people would interact with me, they would think I was Japanese because of my last name.
Oh,
but then
when they
saw me, it was like, oh, you're Caucasian.
Yeah, who's this white girl anyway?
Who's this white girl?
That's great. So before we wrap up, I have four quick questions I ask all my guests. Are you game for a little lightning round just for fun?
Sure.
Yeah?
Sure.
Okay.
Let's go for it, Keith.
Okay. So the first question, how do you define success, either personally and or professionally?
You have to make me think now, Keith.
Yeah,
How do I define success?
It's like Jeopardy.
How I define success in either personal or professional is your level of happiness. How happy are you in your personal life and in your professional life? If you're happy, then that leads you to success, in my opinion.
You know, I've asked that question of many, many people now, and not a single person has ever mentioned salary, how much money they have in the bank. No one has ever mentioned anything like that. So it just goes to show you how we all really define it in the end. I mean, money's nice, you know, but it's not the thing that's truly going to, you know, gratify you in the end. And like they say, you can't take it with you. So,
right. Yeah.
So you're right along in line with everybody else.
Okay. I thought I'd be unique, Keith.
Well, you are unique. So second question, could you name or perhaps just describe a person who's inspired you in the course of your life? They could be living or dead, famous, or someone none of us would ever have heard of.
There was a woman that I worked with back at Baxter. And she was a Persian princess. Now, she was truly royalty from Iran. And I looked up to her so much. She knew so much about the industry. She'd been in it for so long. She had so much to give and to teach. And I just had her in awe. One day she asked me a question about bone marrow processing. And I thought, wow, I've met her standards. And I've always looked up to this woman. Her name is Parveen, and I love her dearly.
Well, that's lovely. And because she's a princess, I just have to ask, did she ever let you wear her tiara?
No, she never did. Darn it.
Man. All right. I just had to ask, you know. All right. So third question, the penultimate question. Is there a book or even a movie? And it doesn't have to be an absolute favorite, because that's hard for many of us to actually pin down. But just a book or movie that's had an impact on either the way you think, the way you live your life, the way you approach your work, just something that holds meaning for you.
So there's a children's book called The Little Prince. And I read it back in the 70s. And it really touched me because there's a secret of life in it. And that secret of life is, it is only with your heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye.
Yeah, The Little Prince by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, right?
Yes, yes.
And I know I didn't pronounce that correctly, but you know, that's lovely. Can you say that one again, that line?
Sure. It is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye.
All right. That's beautiful. That's lovely. That's a beautiful book. It's been done as a play. It's been around since, gosh, it's well over 100 years old, I believe. So
yeah.
It's a worthy one to reread.
Yes.
And not just for children.
Yeah. No, I read it when I was a teenager, and it's stuck with me all these years.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Last question. And it's interesting you mentioned a princess or royalty, because that has a tangential connection to this last question. So I think you've been reading my mail. Okay. So last question. If you were named queen of the world tomorrow, what's one of the first things you would want to do to improve the lives of your subjects? And queen of the world means you have ultimate power. And this first thing you do, it's just the first thing, because you'll be able to do a lot of other things. But what's the first action you would want to take? And you could wear a tiara as well.
Oh, good. I'd want that tiara.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first thing I would do is listen. I would listen to my subjects and help understand their pain points.
That is the sign of a true leader, I think. And I think that's part of leading from behind, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're not being authoritarian or authoritative. You're listening. So mm-hmm. that's lovely. That says a lot about you. And you would look great in a tiara, I have to say.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
you're welcome. Well, Lori, this has been wonderful. I'm so glad to learn about your life and your career and why you love what you do. And I hope somebody listening out there thinks, oh, wow, so I could really move out of the clinical space, but still have a really viable, happy, gratifying career. So thanks for sharing. And thanks for hopefully inspiring someone out there to maybe follow in your footsteps in some way.
Well, I hope I do inspire. It's a great career to be in. And you have so many opportunities in nursing, not just in a hospital bedside. There's so many things out there you can do.
Well, there you have it. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Nurse Keith Show with Lori Harada of Terumo Blood Cell Technologies. Remember, the show notes will be at nursekeith.com or on any app where you happen to be listening. I hope you feel uplifted and empowered and inspired from this episode. And I encourage you to take inspired action every day in the interest of your personal and professional development. If you need personalized holistic career coaching, look no further than nursekeith.com and Nurse Keith Coaching. Mention the show and you get 10% off your first coaching package. And if you want to become a patron at patreon.com, do me a solid, that would be great. Or you can simply support the show by sharing it with someone you know, love, and respect. We're proud members of the Health Podcast Network at healthpodcastnetwork.com. We're produced by Rob Johnston of 520R Podcasting, and Mark Cappy-Speeson is our stalwart social media ringmaster and newsletter wrangler. Before we say goodbye, I'll leave you with this quote by Brené Brown. Because true belonging only happens when we present our authentic, imperfect selves to the world, our sense of belonging can never be greater than our level of self-acceptance. Be well, dig deep, seek joy, keep in touch. This is Nurse Keith saying adios till next time from beautiful Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Lori Harada saying arrivederci from
Carbondale, Colorado.
Carbondale, Colorado. Thank you for being with us, Lori. Thanks to everyone for listening, and we will catch you on the proverbial flip side.